I want us today to consider, if you will, the tragedies that are all around us. We all face tragedies from time to time. But we notice that these tragedies affect us all, some way, somewhere, and any ungiven time. And there's no prediction to them. And a lot of people are so confused and so misconstrued as to the reasoning why there are such tragedies in our lives. Whenever we think about in Romans chapter 5, and we'll begin our study there, we find there that it tells us about the disappointments in life, the tragedies that will come upon us. In verse 1 beginning, he says, "Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and rejoice in hope of the glory of God." And he goes on to say, "And not only that, but we also glory in tribulations." Now imagine that, glorying in tribulations. And he goes on to say, and in that idea there, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance or endurance. So he gives a little insight here as to these tribulations or these tragedies and trials that come our way, whether it be a physical sense or the things of this life or emotional. We find that these things will come upon us. But yet we find the writer here says that we need to glory in those tribulations. And then there comes another thought. How can I glory when I am troubled so much? We find in James chapter 1, going back over to that passage of the writings of James, and we find James illustrating it this way in his passage there, for he says this in verses 2 through 4, he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse tribulations or trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Here we find the writer here, James, he gives us a little more insight into these trials that we're going to have to face. And again, we notice, just as we read there in Romans, in Paul's writings, that he refers to the tribulations and he says, "Count it all joy." And then he goes on to say that this is a test of our faith. And we're going to look into that here in just a little bit. But I want us to notice, if you will, that whenever these tragedies come upon us, they are random. They're not predetermined. We can't set a time or a date as to when it's going to happen. They come upon us all of a sudden. And they will come very difficult. And it kind of puts us into mind as to some people, they start blaming God and they start accusing God of what? Well, if God created such a perfect world, well, when we go back to Genesis chapter 1, and we find there that God did create a perfect world. This world that we live in, this earth, and everything that's in it that He created by speaking it into existence, it was perfect. It was full grown. And as in fact, when you read the end, at the end of His creation, God looked over everything that He had created and He said, "It is good." No flaws. When He created man, though, He created man to be able to make decisions on our own. And here's where we find the fall of man begins. Because of being able to make those decisions on our own, and as we read in our class today and talked about in class today about the Israelites and how many of them strayed away from God, even though they had witnessed with their own eyes the power of God and His security by being one of His children, yet we find that they many times strayed away from Him and no longer followed Him, but followed after all the false gods of Baal and all of the golden calves and things that were created by man. So see, God did create good, but man made it imperfect. Man took down. We find in Genesis chapter 1, 27 through 31, when God created man, He told man, He said, "Here I've created all this for you." And He says, "Keep it, dress it, and multiply upon the earth. Take care of what I have given you." We find over in Genesis chapter 9, and this is after God cleansed the earth of all the destruction that was around it, or all the evil that was around. And we find that after God cleansed everything and the floods receded, that He told Noah a very similar thing. Dress it, keep it, take care of what I have given you, and replenish the earth. Still, things don't go as planned. You know, we've got all kinds, and I kind of show my age here because not too many people go with calendars and planners anymore. They've got cell phones. I don't know how to fix mine to do those things. So I've still got paper and pen, and I've still got little post-it notes all over my desk telling me where I need to be at a certain time and where to go. And most of the time I get messed up on that. But we have all these plans and times that we need to be at certain places. And not everything, rest assured, it doesn't go as planned, does it? Never does. There will be some little thing that will happen, something that will tie us up. If you ever had little children, believe me, that's the time when things happen. Everybody gets ready for church, or you get ready to go somewhere, and some little mishap with one of the children slows things down. You got to readjust. Things don't go always as planned. And no matter how hard we try to keep tragedy from happening in our lives, it's going to happen. It's going to come upon us. I want us to think about some examples given in the Bible. Whenever we look at the book of Job, and I love that book because it's just inspirational with the kind of faith that all of us need to have, is what Job had. Whenever you stop and think about, you know, how many times have you ever thought, I wonder how God thinks of me? Job, here's Job, and God told Satan, He said, "Have you ever considered my servant Job? He's upright, he's righteous, he's faithful. He's one that he eschews, he doesn't have anything to do with evil." That's how God looked at Job. But Satan thought, you know, if you inflict tragedy upon him, he's going to curse you. Now Satan tempted God, and he said, "Try it on him. You go ahead and do it." But we recognize that God does not inflict evil upon us. And what we find is God said, God put a restriction on Satan. He limited him as to what he was to do to Job. And we find throughout the whole book of Job, and I just put some particular notes in here, but in Job chapter 1, just turn our Bibles back over, and let's just look at some of these passages quickly here. And we notice here that in Job chapter 1, we find there how I talked about God talking with Satan and told him to consider his servant Job. And then, of course, we find there that the restriction is put upon Satan. It says there, "And the Lord said to Satan, Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. And as we read on, you read about the tragedies that came upon Job all in one day. Now you think about that. When we have tragedies, usually they don't all come in one day. They're spread out through our lifetimes. But here in particular, we find probably one of the greatest tragedies that could ever come upon any of us happened to Job in one day. He lost all of his children in one day. He lost all of his cattle and his herds and everything that he had worked so hard for. He lost it all in one day. All these things were taken from him. And then we find, though, that it says in verse 22 there, "In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong." He didn't blame God. And we find also, when you go a little further, that we find that Satan came to God once again. And he said, now give me a little more breathing room here, God. He says, I want you to allow me to touch his health. And once again, though, God put a limit upon Satan. He said, you can do that, but not to take him to death. This is where we find that Job was inflicted with all the sore boils all over his body. Now, I've never had a boil, not even one. But what I've heard is they are very, very painful. And that's just for one boil. Now imagine if those boils were all over your body from head to heel. Now Job had already lost everything he had, including his family, lost the support of his wife. All of these things come upon him. Great tragedy upon Job. Well, we find that it talks in later on into the book of Job, and I didn't put all this in there, three so-called friends come to Job. Now, their purpose in coming was to comfort Job. But what ended up in result was that they ended up putting blame on Job for some sin that they said, there has to be some sin that you have committed in your life that has caused all this affliction to come upon you. And they were just constantly badgering him, one right after another. As you read through the book of Job, you'll see that it was just one, then the second one, then the third one. Oh, and then the first one came back again. And they were constantly looking in and digging into the life of Job and trying to determine what sin Job had committed, to the point that Job himself even questioned. Well, what we find, and I want us to turn our Bibles, if you will, over to chapter 40 of the book of Job now. And we find that God, He's been observing all this, and He's been listening, just as He listens to all of us in our lifetimes. That's why it's so important that we caution ourselves in the things we think and the things we say, because God's observing all these things. But we find in chapter 40 of the book of Job there, notice there what it says in verses 1 through 4. It said, Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold. See, God has put Job on the spot here. He said, what are you thinking here, Job? What is it going on in your mind? And Job, he answers God, and he says, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth, he says. I'm going to shut up here, God. You've made your point. We find going over to chapter 42, we find there that Job answered the Lord, and he said in verses 1 and 2 there, 1 through 3, and it says there, I know that you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You ask, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand. See, that's a problem with a lot of us. Things happen and we try to make sense of it. We try to understand these things, but you know, some things just can't be understood. We don't understand here the some of the things that happened to Job and make sense of it. But then whenever you put it into proper perspective, and that's where we end up looking at it, Job's perspective, it changed here. He realized that it wasn't because of some sin that he had committed. It was a test of his faith. And when we look at tragedies in our lives, let's put them into proper perspective. Tragedies are a test of our faith. And by overcoming those tragedies, it makes us stronger in our faith, to where we can overcome and conquer the next tragedy that comes along, and the next tragedy that comes along. And the more that we overcome, the stronger we become in our faith to God, in our service to God. Job had to learn this, and Job learned it well. I want us to look at another example, and that is of Joseph. When we turn our Bibles back over to Genesis, we find that there was a young man here, And of course, Jacob in his old age had this son, Joseph. And it was his, you know, we always say don't show favoritism among children of your own or anyone's or your grandchildren, because it creates envy and strife among the other ones. And here is a situation very clear in Jacob's family. We find that Joseph was favored by his father. And we find here that there was many a time that the older sons, it was just like slowly but surely they were getting more and more jealous and envious of Joseph over how that his father watched over him and how he dealt with him. In verses 1 through 4 of Genesis 37, it says there, Jacob, he dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. The history of Jacob was that Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. The lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Some would say, well, he was a snitch. Well, and we find here that that can create animosity. And it goes on to say that now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, which was another downfall. We need to be cautious. These are lessons that we need to learn as parents. Because he was a son of his old age, and he had made him a tunic of many colors. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. They really didn't have much of a relationship with Joseph over this ordeal. Well, what we find is, going a little further there in verse 20, it says we find that the brothers, it got to the point where they plotted against Joseph. And in verse 20 it says, come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. Well, one of the brothers had some sense to him, that was Reuben. And we find there that he heard about this and he delivered him out of their hands and he said, we're not going to kill him. That's not going to happen, boys. Instead, it says there, Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness. Do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. That was Reuben's idea. Let's put him in the pit for a while, let him think about what he's doing to us, and then later on we'll bring him back to his father. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. They took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, and their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, he said, what profit is if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Let's just sell him. That's what they decided to do. This jealousy became to the point where not only did they want to kill him, but now they said, hey, all right, we won't kill him, but let's just get rid of him. We'll sell him. We'll sell him into slavery. And so that's what they did. And then it says there, it says in verse 28, then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up out and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. They were done with him. He was no longer a problem for them. Well, Reuben returned, noticed that Joseph was not in the pit. So now we have to come up with another plan. Now what I'm showing you is that the tragedy of Joseph here. Joseph didn't bring any of this upon himself. But by jealousy, we find that the tragedy come upon him. Here was a young man that had everything going for him. He was with his father Jacob. And then we find here that all of a sudden now his whole life has been turned around just a moment. And now he's some slave bound for Egypt. course, as it goes on down through there, we read about how that the brothers dipped his tunic in the animal's blood and came up with this story that he'd been killed by some wild beast. And it said Jacob mourned. And as you read on through, you'll find out that Jacob never eased up on that mourning. He continued that mourning throughout. We go over to chapter 41, and we find there that in Egypt, Joseph was sold to Potiphar, one of the servants of Pharaoh. Or not servant, but one of those in with Pharaoh. And we find here that during that time, we find that Potiphar's wife, she liked Joseph more than she really should. And she wanted to be with him, even though she was married to Potiphar. And we find Joseph here, even becoming a slave and all this, he still remained faithful unto God. He's separated from his family. He's with some strange family in their household, the household of Potiphar. And now all of a sudden, tragedy strikes again. He's got a woman chasing after him, Potiphar's wife. And we find as it goes on that it says that he resisted her many times, but then she finally got a hold of his cloak and he left it behind because he ran from her. And once again, someone makes up a story, a false story about Joseph. That he tried to get with her. She turned the whole thing around. And we find that he was put into prison. Spent several years in prison. We find the butler and the cook. We find that they were in prison with him. And we find that there were dreams. See, Joseph had something special, a special gift from God. He was able to interpret dreams. And that's part of the problem he had with his brothers. He would interpret dreams that he would see, and his brothers became angry with what he was trying to tell them. And of course, later on, we're going to find out they came true. But yet we find here that this young man is dealing with this tragedy one after another. And we find that as he's in prison, you would think he would have given up by now. Another tragedy struck him. But he answers and he interprets the dreams of the butler and the baker. And we find that those dreams came true. And we find that in time, Pharaoh had a dream. No one could interpret his dream. None of his wise men or any of them. And so we find as we read through there that it came to pass that Pharaoh sent for Joseph because he had heard about how Joseph was able to do these things. So in chapter 41 and verse 17 is where we come to that point. And it says, Pharaoh said to Joseph, he said, Behold, in my dream I stood in the bank of the river. Seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. But behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. And they had eaten them up. When they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. And then I awoke, he said. Also I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full of good. Then behold, seven heads withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind sprang up after them. The heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me, he said. So Joseph said to Pharaoh, The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one, he says. You've got to look at this as one. He said, the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. That was the interpretation of those dreams, that famine was coming upon all the land. Now you would have thought that a man that had gone through all these tragedies and things, that he would have just said, you know, interpret your own dreams. But what we find here is that he still remained faithful to God. And here's what I want us to think about with Joseph, is that the providence of God was at work with him. God had a purpose for him, just as God has a purpose for each and every one of us. I rest assured of that. That if we follow after God and do the things that God has commanded us, no matter what the tragedies that come upon us, there is a plan that lies awaiting for each and every one of us. God has set that plan in order. And as long as we follow after God, things will work according to plan, no matter what the tragedies may come upon us. What we find here is that through all of this, Joseph was made head over all of the grain and everything that was going on. He was made in charge of preparing for the great famine to come. And when the famine came, if it had not been for the foresight of Joseph by the power of God, many nations would have perished. And what we find is, as all these different nations came to Egypt for grain to sustain their lives, and lo and behold, here come the other sons of Jacob in pursuit of food and grain. And Joseph recognized them, of course, but they didn't recognize him. But when it was made known unto them who he was, all those dreams that he dreamed about as a lad were fulfilled. His brothers bowed to him. His father came and lived the remainder of his life in Egypt with him, under his roof. And we find in chapter 50 and verses 15 through 21 of Genesis, we find there that after Jacob had passed away, the brothers became scared that Joseph would do something harmful to them. And here's a lesson to be learned, that no matter how bad someone treats us, how evil people can be toward us, and what kind of tragedies come upon us, let us not take vengeance. Joseph remained faithful to God. Joseph did not do any harm to his brothers, but yet he embraced them with love and compassion. These are lessons to be learned, to understand that there's a higher power in charge. And even though the tragedies come upon us, we do not blame God. And as we found out in Job, it's a test of our faith. We fit into this plan. And beyond, and many of us try to figure things out, and some things are just beyond our comprehension. But rest assured, God's got it in control. Turn your Bibles, if you will, back over to Romans chapter 8. And notice there that it tells us this in Romans chapter 8 and verse 18. And we notice there, here Paul says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time... Now notice here, he's talking about tragedies in his life. He's talking about sufferings here. And he says here, I consider the sufferings of this present time that they are not worthy to be compared. He's comparing his tragedies to what? Notice. Compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. There's a far better glory than this earth can ever give us. That home in heaven. And Paul is comparing that. He's saying what we need to do is we need to stop and think about the tragedies in our lives, how these things come upon us, the pain and agony that it gives us. But then whenever I stop and think about that home in heaven, Revelation 21 refers to a place where there's no more pain, no more sorrow, no more agony, no more death. All that's done away with. There's no comparison, is there? And it kind of takes away the gloom and despair of this present life when we look toward that hope of heaven. We find, if you go a little further there to verse 28, and notice Paul here again says, he says, we know that all things work together for good to those who love the Lord. It may not be to our liking, but everything will work out for good. It will have a good result. We may have to overcome tragedies, but rest assured, it will come out as a good result in the end. I was at the viewing for Jim Grushon Sr. And one of the things that Jim Grushon Jr. told me was, this is not a day of mourning for me. This is a day of victory. This is a day of gladness. He said, I can rest assured my dad, even though he's gone through many sufferings in this life, but he's in paradise today. There's a reward that waits for us in the end. And one tragedy, as I put it here, one tragedy can set in motion a chain of good things to come. But we have to learn how to overcome. Don't blame God falsely. Don't lose hope. Remain faithful unto God. In Matthew chapter 5, we find that, you know, good things happen to good and bad alike. When we look at Matthew 5:45, it talks about the sun and the rain, and how that the sun and the rain, it falls on the good and the evil. We find in 2 Timothy 3 there, where Paul talks to Timothy and tells him there, he says, those who live godly shall suffer persecution. If I'm going to live godly and righteously in the sight of God, I can rest assured I'm going to suffer persecution in my life. Tragedies are going to come upon me. And I need to be ready, well equipped to overcome it. I want us to think about this. There is no promise in the Scriptures of God delivering us from tragedies. There are no promises of that. When you and again, I refer back to the Israelite nations. When you look at the Israelite nation, there was tragedies one right after another. Grief and despair. We just talked about Job. We talked about Joseph. You look in, and we're going to look here in a few minutes, in just a moment here, to David. Despair comes upon all of God's children. And God does not promise He's going to deliver us from those kind of persecutions. But what one thing God does do is He promises us a way of getting through them. And that's what we need to be looking and focusing on, is how to get through those problems. As we find that God has given us all Scripture, it is profitable. Let us use it for the benefit and the use of overcoming. In Psalms, turn your Bibles back over to Psalms chapter 18. In Psalms 18, and notice here if you will, let me get my Bible back here to it. We find that David, and this is just the assurance that David has in God here. In chapter 18 and verse 6 of that passage, I just can't get my pages to keep from sticking here. But we find here that David is talking about his trust in God. And he says here, in my distress, I called upon the Lord. Who do we call upon when I'm in distress? Who is it? Think about it. Who is it that I look to, that I turn to when I am in grief, when I am in turmoil? Here is where we need to turn. Just as David, he says, in my distress, I called upon the Lord. I cried out to my God. And notice here what he says. Here's his faith and trust in God. He says, He heard my voice from His temple, and my cry came before Him, even to His ears. God is there. He's listening. He understands our griefs. He understands our pains. And He's here to assist us and see us through them. Not to keep it from happening to us, but to ease it as we go through it. God is there by our side. You know, there's the poem, The Footprints in the Sand. I'm sure all of you somewhere in your house has one of those, that little thing about the poem. And it kind of depicts what I'm trying to say here. That as we go through life's journey, we're going along, and we find that there's two footprints in the sand. But then when tragedy, and I'm not reading this word for word because I didn't bring it with me, but I remember what it means. But when tragedy comes upon us, this person noticed that there was only one set of prints in the sand. Now, to their thinking, they thought that God had abandoned them. And sometimes that's exactly how we all think. We think God has abandoned us. Look at this grief that I'm going through, and where's God? Can't find Him. But in the latter part of that poem, it talks about, and God answers and says, No, I didn't abandon you. In your time of trial, I was carrying you. The footprint, the single set of footprints in the sand was those of God. And the other set was missing because God was carrying them through that time of grief and turmoil in their lives. And rest assured, God is going to carry each and every one of us through. He will get us through those times of distress in our lives. Just as David was assured of that. When you turn your Bibles over to chapter 91 of the book of Psalms there, and we find in verses 1 through 8, notice it says here, David says, He who dwells in secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty, he says. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler, from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. Notice those trials are not being eliminated, but God is protecting us through them. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Again in Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good to those who love the Lord. God will see us through. God will work out all things. Good will come. The reward will be there. This life is full of pain and agony and tragedy. And we need to look at it as just a pilgrimage as we go through it, bringing us to the homeland that God has prepared for us. In closing, I just want you to consider how important God is to us, and how that God is watching over us, how He cares for us, how He supplies us with all the necessities of this life. And God will see us through to the end. Whatever your needs are today, an invitation is going to be given. We're going to sing that song here in a moment. If there's sin in your life, if you've never obeyed the gospel, now is the time to obey that gospel. God watches over His children. But those who are rebellious, those who turn their back on God, God has no part in this. Have the assurance that God is by you, that God will help you. That requires faith and obedience to His will. That's what's required of us. If you are children of God, and there's sin in our lives that we need to make right, don't hesitate one more moment. Sin is what separates man from God. And when we're separated from God, we're separated from His safety. Let's get back in relationship with God while God gives us that opportunity to do so. While together we stand and sing the invitation song, let us sing.